Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 20th of August. The first hour of our program today, we talk about the Employee Free Choice Act and a little bit of background in order here. The Wall Street Journal had a piece, front page story actually, on the 1st of August, and it reported that the Bentonville, Arkansas Walmart retailer held meetings with thousands of store managers and department supervisors across the country to talk about this legislation, which the company opposes. The digital recordings made by an employee was held for managers in a southern state, one of the meetings, and the leader tells employees that their wages may be reduced to minimum wage for up to 3 months before a contract is negotiated. Union authorization cards violate workers' right to privacy by including their social security numbers, and that if a small unit within a store votes to unionize, the entire store will be unionized. In other places, the groups say that there were statements made and people were told who supports the legislation and who does not, and that some may have crossed the law here in advocating the defeat of Senator Barack Obama. We talk about this law, what exactly it is, and we'll have two different viewpoints on it. James Shirk is joining us the first half hour of the program, Bradley Fellow in Labor Policy at the Center for Data Analysis at the Heritage Foundation. Later, David Newby will join us, president of the Wisconsin State AFL-CIO. James writes in a piece, a summary for the Heritage Foundation, that organized labor has made this Employee Free Choice Act its top legislative priority, and he has deep concerns about it. It would impose binding arbitration for the initial bargaining agreement after organization and increases the penalties for unfair labor practices. Each of these provisions, he believes, would harm American workers, and we'll find out why. We welcome your phone calls, as we always do. The phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. And if you'd like to join us by email, that's talk@wpr.org. James Shirk is our guest now. Hello, James. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me on.
Sure. Let's start with the Wall Street Journal August 1st article that looks specifically at Walmart. Do you have any problems with the meetings that were held with supervisors around the country to talk about this? Did it cross the law, do you think?
If you take a look at what the article says, it looks like Walmart really hasn't done anything wrong. What they did, quite sensibly, you've got a massive change in labor law being promoted, and they want their supervisors and managers to be aware of this, that this could be a change, and to be prepared, start preparing for it now. Sure, you might have had some managers in a few stores misrepresent what the law says, but the point of the meetings was not to try and get the managers to vote one way or the other. If you take a look at how many managers they have nationwide, it wouldn't be anything close to enough to swing any votes. What it was is to prepare their managers for this change in the law. Walmart has a very strong policy of trying to oppose union organizing, but the way they do it, contrary to the complaints of the AFL-CIO, is they monitor employee morale. They make their supervisors accessible to employees. They try and preemptively provide the employees with working conditions such that the employees don't want a union. And it would make sense for them to warn the managers, hey, this is coming down the pike. There's some reports that the unions are already collecting cards now, and the expectation the act will be passed, and then the cards are good for a year, just turn them in immediately. So they want their supervisors to be on the ball on this. It's a perfect business sense. There's no reason for this to be controversial.
Why do you call the Employee Free Choice Act a massive change in labor law?
Currently, most workers join unions through secret ballot elections. What unions do is they solicit these union authorization cards, ask the workers to sign, and hand them in to the NLRB, and the NLRB will then come in and hold a organizing election. What the Employee Free Choice Act does is gets rid of those secret ballot organizing elections. Once the union organizers collect cards in public from a majority of workers, they would automatically join the union with no election. In fact, it would be illegal for the NLRB to hold a secret ballot election once unions have collected cards from a majority of workers. This takes away workers' privacy. It exposes them to pressure of many sorts, peer pressure, because the union can have pro-union co-workers come up and ask you, hey, why haven't you signed on? We think the union would be great. And put a lot of pressure on workers. You've got cases of intimidation and harassment. There was a steelworkers organizer who was testifying before Congress. His name's Ricardo Torres. And he testified that he quit the steelworkers after his supervisors, in one of these campaigns, told him to threaten migrant steelworkers that they would be reported to federal immigration authorities if they wouldn't sign the cards. Workers shouldn't have to put up with that. They should have the right to vote in privacy, one way or the other, whether you vote for the union, whether you don't vote for the union. Unions win most of these elections. But one way or the other, workers should have the right to decide in privacy with no one knowing how they voted.
What about pressure from the other side? The National Labor Relations Board has ruled several times that Walmart violated the law by retaliating against workers for supporting a union.
If you take a look at the actual violations that occur, you see that they're the rare exception. Walmart had, in a recent report came out from Human Rights Watch, and the bottom line was that Walmart had 15 violations across all their stores over a period of 5 years. That's three violations a year in the store that employs well over a million employees. Of course you're going to have some bad apples. You're going to have supervisors who cross the line in some cases. But so few violations tells you that there's no policy of trying to undermine workers' rights or trying to retaliate. The policy is to obey the law and provide workers with such good working conditions that they're not going to want to join a union. That's the gist of, if you take a look at the complaints about Walmart's efforts to oppose organizing, is what they do is they meet with employees, they make the supervisors accessible, and they preemptively try and preempt workers' complaints.
Do you think that, just to clear the air here, there should be an investigation of what's going on in Walmart?
If there was any illegal conduct, of course there should be an investigation, but based on what I can tell from the Wall Street Journal report, it doesn't look like Walmart did anything illegal.
Mm-hmm. And what about this? In one of these meetings, they were saying that if you have 10 associates, say, in a photo lab and 6 sign union authorization cards, the store is unionized. 6 people could make a decision for 350 people. Is that right in your viewpoint?
No, that would not be what the law says. But again, it looks like what you had is you had a few people misrepresenting it. Walmart said this was not our corporate policy. And from what I've heard, that the UFCW and the unions have been trying to push the story for several months, and they finally found a reporter who would buy it, that they found one case and were trying to push this as an anecdote, but anecdotes are a long, long way from establishing that there was any sort of corporate policy to misrepresent the act. There's simply no evidence, no credible evidence to suggest that.
Who would do an investigation, and what would prompt an investigation, James?
Well, companies are not allowed to tell their employees how to vote one way or the other. I believe it's the Federal Election Commission that would take a look into that. But again, that's an issue of political campaign finance law, not labor law.
Mm-hmm. And would there be substantial, very substantial fines under this Employee Free Choice Act if companies interfered with the right to organize?
Well, that's the problem with the act. There's fines for misconduct, which is in principle not a problem, but there's only fines on employers, not on unions. So under this act, you take away all privacy from workers. They must vote in public. If the employer does anything wrong, they would face a $20,000 fine. That's fairly reasonable. But if the union violates the laws and commits an unfair labor practice, if they, say, threaten a worker, you had workers, there was an organizing campaign in Las Vegas at the MGM Grand, and the unions were telling workers, hey, you'd better sign the card, because we're going to get in. You know we're going to get in. But if you don't sign the card, we're going to get you fired when we're finally recognized. That's ridiculous. It's outrageous that unions would be able to put that kind of pressure on workers. And with card check, the worker would have to sign and vote then and there in front of the union organizer, letting the organizer know how they voted. If unions cross the line, they should also face the same penalties, and the act imposes no penalties on unions, none whatsoever. That's what's unfair about it. It exposes workers to tremendous pressure from unions who, it's not that every union member is a bad apple, but there are some. And there are some organizers who do cross the line in order to get new members recruited to get the union dues flowing in.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no increase in penalties, none whatsoever, for unions who cross the line. Workers need protection on both events, and it makes no sense to do it in such a one-sided fashion.
What's the story with the legislation in terms of where Congress is? When will they be voting on this again, and where does Congress stand? Are they mostly for, mostly against? Has it been voted on before?
The story is that the unions have exerted a lot of pressure within the Democratic Party, and as a result, almost every Democrat supports the legislation. It passed the House in a largely party-line vote, went to the Senate, and it was killed in a filibuster. Only one Republican voted for it in the Senate, Arlen Specter, Pennsylvania. And the Democrats and organized labor are hoping that they can win enough Senate seats that they can break the filibuster in the next Congress. Organized labor has publicly committed to spending at least $300 million to pass its legislation to take away workers' rights to vote and privacy. And there's some estimates that, well, that's the public figure. In private, it might come close to $500 million in the presidential and the Senate races to get this passed.
And how much money will be spent on the other side?
Nothing near that. The figures I've heard have been $20 to $30 million. But I'm not in the know for something like that.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls, and we'll take them in just a moment. Our number is 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050. We also have an email address you can use, and that's talk at WPR.org, talk at WPR.org. Our guest this half hour is James Shirk, and James is concerned about the Employee Free Choice Act. He is Bradley Fellow in Labor Policy, Center for Data Analysis at the Heritage Foundation. Before we take phone calls and take just a brief pause here, have there been a lot of, so much attention has been focused on Walmart for many, many years now, as you well know, James. Have there been a lot of efforts to organize Walmart workers?
Yes, there have. Unions have come in many cases. There's been a number of secret ballot elections. And what the unions have found is that they just can't persuade workers in the privacy of the voting booth to vote for a union. And they're most upset about this. Walmart has a million workers. When you consider that they charge about 2% of workers' annual wages and union dues, that would be tens of millions of dollars flowing into their coffers every year if they could organize. And they've just been unable to persuade it. Walmart has very effectively, they monitor employee morale, they preemptively address employee problems, and they'll do things like educate workers about the downsides of unions that the union organizers are trained to avoid. They'll go into the union's mandatory public finance disclosures and point out things like, well, look, the president of this union is earning a six-figure salary. None of you are getting close to that. That's what your dues are going for. Here are the expensive resorts and condos and the expensive steak dinners that they're using your union dues to pay for. The misuse of members' dues that the unions really would prefer that members not know about, and point out to the workers, hey, is this where you want your wages going for? Is this what you want your dues going for? In many cases, once workers hear both sides of the story, they decide that they're not quite as interested as they were when the union organizers only gave them the pro-union side.
We welcome phone calls, and we'll take them in just a moment. James Shirk is our guest. We're talking about the Employee Free Choice Act. We'll hear another side of the issue later on in the program. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls now. 800-486-8655 is our number. James Shirk is our guest. He is Bradley Fellow in Labor Policy at the Center for Data Analysis for the Heritage Foundation. And Ed from West Allis is our first call. Hi, Ed.
Well, institutional chicanery, gangsterism, economic terrorism, and mendacity of the Heritage Foundation is just on parade this morning. The pure fact of the matter is that the absolute pressure that Walmart places on its employees, the number of pro-union people that have been fired from Walmart for attempting to form, join, aid, and assist a labor union is just legion. There are too many cases. The fact of the weakness of the National Labor Relations Board to have these fines stick against Walmart, the weakness of the National Labor Relations Board. This act that we're debating this morning is nothing more than the 1978-79 labor law reform that, once again, the right-wing Republicans and the hateful people in this country that have taken organized labor down to 6.3% of the private workforce basically killed in cloture back in 1979. Our problem is that we don't have the effective national leaders anymore. They're too in bed with big business to make this fight go national and to win this thing. But the lies that I have heard this morning, just in terms of the composition of the National Labor Relations Board, the National Labor Relations Board is one of the weakest arms of the federal government. it is totally, totally dominated on the federal level by pro-business, anti-union people at the board, both at the board level and then at the council level, the attorneys who write the decisions that the board issues. This has been the case now for 30 years. The last time we had a pro-labor board was under the Johnson administration. And you see what has happened to this country when we have an anti-union animus that pervades this country. We are at the very depths of economic despair in this country. And we are at the very essence of depression. And your guest is the great symbol of that.
All right, let's get a response. We have a lot of callers, Ed. Thanks. James?
At a very basic factual level, the National Labor Relations Board currently has one Democratic and one Republican member. It's an even split right now. You had, certainly under the Clinton and Carter administrations, very, very pro-union boards. To the larger point, take a look at Walmart. There are a grand total of 15 cases over 5 years. Yes, there's some bad apples. It's not as though Walmart is everywhere and always perfect, but there's no general policy. And you will hear over and over and over again stories that 20,000, 30,000 workers a year are fired for wanting to support a union. You'll probably hear that later on when your guest from the AFL-CIO is on. And you take a look behind those figures, and they are absolutely unsubstantiated. They're a misrepresentation of the numbers coming out of the National Labor Relations Board. It's a figure that comes from the number of workers who are ordered to receive back pay during the course of the year, which is in almost all cases when the company makes some changes to the working conditions and don't negotiate over it first. Well, the government then orders, no, you have to negotiate before you can make any changes. Pay the workers what they would have received in wages or hours otherwise. Has nothing to do with union organizing. And yet it's trotted out as 20 or 30,000 workers being intimidated or fired, worker every 17 minutes. And you just hear these stories again and again and again that workers are being fired left, right, and center. And this is why private secret ballots are so unfair. And you look behind the figures, and it's simply not the case. There's no substantiation to these claims. Take a look at what's been investigated, and Walmart is not firing legions of workers.
Thanks for the call, Ed. Let's go to Jim from Hazel Green. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I was listening to your guest here and laughing at him. I spent 35 years in the trenches organizing. I was with the Machinist Union. I'm now retired, and we organized all kinds of plants, and a lot of plants we didn't get organized because of the unfair labor practices of corporations. What they typically do is they'll spend a couple $1 million bringing attorneys in, having closed-door meetings with their employees, threatening them with plant closures and so on and so forth if they join a union. And like your guest said, the maximum fine they're going to get for doing that is $20,000, $30,000. Well, they'll gladly spend the $20,000, $30,000 to drag out a union organizing effort for 3 or 4 years, and those individuals get disgusted. There's no way right now that the law is so tilted in the corporate favor. Walmart, Maytag, Whirlpool, GE, and they love it like that. They'll, as I said before, I've been in, and as far as the records show, if you think a company, when they discharge or let an employee go, they're going to put on his discharge slip or his slip to let go that he was discharged for union activities, you're out of your mind. They're going to lie about that, too.
Jim,
I've
what?
I've 35 years with these guys, and there's some corporations that are good, well-meaning, and treat their employees right, but there's a lot of them that aren't.
And, Jim, how do you think the Employee Free Choice Act would make things substantially better?
We'll see.
Well, it speeds it up. What it does is the employees can sign it, and if you get a majority of them, then you go into the organization and say that you've got a majority of the members that have agreed to join the union, and you can go right into negotiations and try to improve the contract and the benefits and the seniority clauses for these individuals. Vacation, the way it is right now, you can't even get a company to negotiate because they challenge the cards, number one. Then they start having these private meetings on company property, paid for by the company on a weekly, daily basis. And if they find out individuals, and they will, that are helping us organize, those are the individuals that they'll discriminate against and find some reason to discharge them because of poor work performance or an absentee problem or a bad attitude problem. So on their discharge slip, they just put on bad attitude.
Okay. James, could we get a response from you?
Well, again, it's highly illegal to fire workers. And, of course, companies don't say, I fired you because you wanted to join the union. But you can tell if you had, oh, look, surprise, all the lead union supporters were fired from this company. It gets investigated. It is a criminal offense. And it's something they look into. But even if you think that's not a problem, even if you think that's a severe problem, how does taking away workers' right to vote and privacy stop that? Taking away their right to a private vote does not stop the company from issuing threats that they're going to shut down the company. It does not stop the company from firing workers who want to join the union. Taking away workers' privacy does nothing to stop the complaints that have been raised here. It would have no effect. What it does do is make it a lot easier to pressure workers into joining the union. And if they say no the first time, the organizers can come back again and again and again. Come to your home at night. There were workers at a hotel in Los Angeles who had to get a court injunction to stop groups of organizers, of 8 to 10 organizers, from coming to their homes and harassing them at their porches at night to sign the card. How does taking away workers' privacy protect them in any way, shape, or form?
Thanks for the call. We need to move on. We go to Mike from Woodstock, Illinois. Hi, Mike. Hey, Mike, are you there? Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
Yes, I'm here. I just had a few comments. I thought the main gist of this rule change was that, like the other gentleman said, it wouldn't have to go through a voting phase. It would just do the petition and jump right into being, you know, starting the unionizing process. I don't think the main gist of this thing was to deny people their privacy. You know, maybe I'm wrong. The other thing, too, was I used to do service work on forklifts, and this is just my own personal opinion, but I never met, out of all the companies I was at, the most disgruntled people by far were Sam's Club, which is part of Walmart, their employees. So where he gets this good morale thing, I don't know where that's coming from. Also, the union that I used to work with, as far as organizing goes, one of the techniques they would use is salting, where they would put somebody on the inside, and unbeknownst to the company, this was a process they used to try to get a union. Why would you have to put someone in there in secret if you weren't afraid of repercussions from the company? Think about it. I mean, this guy you've got on is clearly anti-worker, anti-union. It's obvious. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. Do you consider yourself anti-worker, James?
I'm a worker. I don't consider myself anti-worker at all. The reason it's an issue of privacy is because what unions find is that workers will often sign the card in the presence of the union organizers, and then in the privacy of the voting booth say no. Their union organizing manuals will say, look, don't assume that just because a worker signs the card means he wants to join. Often he's just signing to get the organizer's office back, which is why they'll only go in for an election when they've got cards signed by 70 or 80% of the workers, because they know that a lot of those workers don't really want to join. But what you do is you take away the ability for the worker to privately, in public, get the organizer office back, but then in private express his true choice in the secrecy of the ballot box. It's a fundamental American right. Secret ballots are a fundamental right. You should not have to decide and tell face-to-face to multiple union organizers that I want to join your union or I don't. Do it in the private seal of the ballot box. It's fundamentally American.
What's your prognosis? Where do you think this is going to go? If the Democrats win substantially, this law is a given?
It depends. It depends on whether or not Obama wins. It depends on what happens with the Senate elections. It's not a given. They need to win a lot of seats in the Senate, but it's organized labor's top priority. You have Jimmy Hoffa boasting that he can double his membership if he gets this passed. They desperately want this. They're going to exert a lot of pressure. It could well happen. Are there really another million Americans who want Jimmy Hoffa and the Teamsters to represent them? Well, with secret ballot elections, they're not going to get it, which is why they want this so strongly.
Thank you so much, James, for being with us.
Thank you.
James Shirk is the Bradley Fellow in Labor Policy at the Heritage Foundation. He's been working on the minimum wage, card check, rising standards of living, and other tax, labor, and economic issues in the Center for Data Analysis. We hear a different point of view now and still welcome your phone calls. David Newby is joining us the second half hour of the program, president of the Wisconsin State AFL-CIO, a federation of 1,000 local unions, which represents some 250,000 workers in the state of Wisconsin. David has led the federation's initiative to ensure that everyone in Wisconsin has comprehensive, affordable, quality health care, and he served as 8 years before being elected president in 94 as secretary treasurer and legislative director of the state AFL-CIO. He is with us now. We'll welcome phone calls for David, and the number remaining the same, 800-486-8655, 414-227-2050 if you're in Milwaukee. And we also have an email that you can use, and that's talk@wpr.org. Our conversation, in case you just tuned in, is about the Employee Free Choice Act. A Wall Street Journal article on August 1st looked at the situation at Walmart, in which they said that reporters had found out that from digital recordings made by Walmart employees that managers really around the country have been telling employees that their wages may be reduced to minimum wage before a contract is negotiated. They are telling them about violations of workers' privacy, including their social security numbers, and that if a small unit within a store votes to unionize, the entire store will be unionized. There have been complaints now that will be filed, petitions with the National Labor Relations Board investigating all of this. There's also some concern about statements that have been made that may mount to advocating a defeat of the Democrats, and particularly Senator Obama, who's in favor of this legislation. Senator McCain is not. So, David Newby is with us now. Hello, David. Long time no speak. How are you?
It has been a long time, yeah. Kathleen. Good to be with you.
Yeah, good to be with you. Tell me, the guest from Heritage said that this would be the most massive change in labor law in years and years and years. Would it?
Well, it would be the first change that we've had in many years, and it would also be the first change that actually favors workers and unions rather than putting more barriers in their way towards organizing and protecting their rights. Because this really is not about Walmart, although that Wall Street Journal story did spark a lot of interest. But what this whole issue is about and what the Employee Free Choice Act is about is that if a majority of workers want a union, then they should be able to have one without intimidation or harassment from management. That's really what it's about. And under current law, it is almost always a situation where if workers get to the point that they petition for an election, that management will bring in outside consultants to help them run a very intense anti-union campaign, which involves one-on-one meetings between workers and their supervisors, in other words, those who control their jobs, or larger, essentially, captive audience meetings in which way they will give not only the management line, but a whole series of arguments about why unions are bad and so forth. We also know that, and that happens, by the way, in at least three-quarters of the situations where workers have petitioned for an election. We also know that in at least one-fourth of all union elections, union representation elections, at least one of the most active workers on the inside is fired. Mm. And it's not just the fact that one person is fired. It's the message that management is sending to all of their workers, that if you get involved in this campaign, if you vote for a union, this is what's going to happen to you. And so the intimidation is very, very intense. And the fellow from Heritage was talking about the possibility for coercion of workers to sign union right. authorization cards. Well, sure, that does exist. I mean, there's a possibility there, but the law also makes that a crime, whereas currently the penalties against employers are practically non-existent. And just to give you, and I know I'm sort of going
it's on
a blink here, but just to give you one example of that, in Madison, the workers at the Superior Laundry have been trying to organize for well over a year. And they have filed over 22 charges with the National Labor Relations Board of management violations of our current law. And 22 of those charges were found to be valid by the board. What was the penalty to management? Simply to post a notice saying that they were sorry and they wouldn't do it again, even though they have continued to harass their workers and their behavior has not changed at all. So we've got a situation today where workers are being very severely coerced and intimidated and no penalties against management. We need to change that. It should not be that difficult for unions to have, for workers to have a union if a majority honestly wants to have one.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting that he used the phrases intimidation and harassment on the part of those who are trying to organize, which is something that those who are in favor of open elections here are saying that that's what workers have been doing, is intimidating and harassing. Is it much worse on one side than the other?
Oh, obviously. And particularly because when management is trying to defeat a union organizing drive, they've got all the power. They have, first of all, the power to call meetings and to talk to workers on their work time. They have the ability to call meetings, and union organizers, of course, are not even allowed in the place of work. They have to talk to workers outside of the workplace, and workers are not even allowed to talk about the union and the union issues except on their own break time unless management has, you know, initiated the conversation. So this is not currently a democratic process. Mm-hmm. It's a process in which really management has all the cards and no penalties against violating even the extraordinarily weak labor law that we have today.
Now, these people who have been submitting petitions requesting an investigation into Walmart, where do those go? Do they go to the National Labor Relations Board? And would you agree that that's a fairly weak body?
You know, I'm not sure if it goes to the National Labor Relations Board or if it's an election law violation.
I see.
I really can't tell you about that.
Mm-hmm. But is an investigation, a thorough investigation, likely by any board, or does not a board like that exist?
Well, I assume it would be the Federal Elections Commission.
Mm-hmm.
But it, you know, it certainly is a very serious issue, because if management of corporations is going to have major campaigns to try to influence how people vote in political elections, then that goes far beyond what has been done before in terms of putting money into elections and, you know, essentially rigging the election process itself. So it takes things to a higher step that is really rather disturbing. But again, the issue is not just Walmart.
James also referenced the fact that many workers would be upset about the misuse of union dues, that leaders have expensive resorts, they got good cars, that the money is not going exactly where it should be. What about that?
Well, that is a part of the pitch that anti-union consultants will use in closed session meetings where workers are required to attend to hear the anti-union pitch. And essentially they can take, the few instances in which you do have abuses and make that out to be what unions are all about. It's part of the propaganda to turn workers against the union, and in almost all cases it is either not true or exaggerated, and of course they never give the whole side that unions are simply a way for workers to have a voice at work and a voice in determining their own wages and their own benefits.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to phone calls now. David Newby is with us this half hour of the program. David is the president of the Wisconsin State AFL-CIO, and we start our calls with Dave from Green Bay. Hi, Dave.
Good morning, Kathleen. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure, Dave.
Thank you for having both sides of what I think is mostly about this legislation. I do not work for Walmart. I don't agree with some of their labor practices, many of which are pretty well documented. But if this act that is supposed to protect worker privacy, which I think most people would agree is important, if it's fair on both sides of the equation, labor and business, then I don't know why anybody would be against it, unless it's actually not fair. But my, just as an anecdote, I was in the Carpenters Union from 72 until about 80 in the Washington, D.C. area, and the only benefit at that time really to working for the union, a significant benefit, was that the pay scale was a little higher, but that changed drastically over the 8 years I was in the union. In the last years I was in the D.C. area, I worked for a non-union contractor who was great. But anyway, all that to say, the idea that corporations are inherently anti-labor or unfair to labor, I think, is to use fear as a tactic. And I think it's, you know, places where there's unfair or unkind, inhumane labor practices, I think you'll usually see a high turnover in employees. And the union really doesn't, in my experience, I was glad to get out because there was so much very evident corruption and money going in the wrong places in the Carpenters Union then. But finally, I'd like to quote Bob Dylan. This is from a song called Union Sundown. And anybody that knows about the history of labor and business in the United States, obviously labor unions had a very hard time starting out. They were a response to very inhumane labor practices in different industries. Coal mining is one. But anyway, they were a natural, I think, response to unfair and inhumane labor practices. But the unions themselves have a very, very mixed record. And anyway, Bob Dylan saying what I think is really the case, and there's plenty of this on both sides of the aisle, too. He said unions were a good idea till greed got in the way. And it's very plain from my experience, and I think if anybody looks at what unions are doing and how they're influencing the political process and forcing union workers to, you know, pay money to things that they really don't all agree with, there's greed on both sides. And you know, that's sad, but you know, as long as people are treated fairly in this legislation, and obviously that's something that needs to be scrutinized, then why would anybody have any problem with it? Thanks a lot.
Thanks for the call, David.
Well, I certainly agree with the last statement that why would anybody have a problem with the legislation if it simply establishes fairness? And I think it does establish fairness. And again, all workers and unions want is a fair election, a democratic election, and the ability to form a union without intimidation. Now, it's true that, you know, if an employer is a really good employer, treats their workers well, pays them well, gives them good benefits, then it's not likely that they are going to seek out a union. But obviously, that is not always the case. In fact, it's probably the case in a minority of situations. And yet workers do not really effectively have the right to organize under current law. That law has been so weakened, and the penalties against companies are so weak that there is no effective way for workers to organize. Now, and the result is, by the way, that increasingly unions simply are bypassing the entire National Labor Relations Board election process. And what they are doing is finding different ways of getting employers to agree to be neutral in an election and to agree to a majority sign-up, majority authorization process, which is validated by a third party. So essentially the only way that they have found to organize currently is to essentially get the same kinds of procedures that are outlined in the Employee Free Choice Act, but get them through voluntary compliance with the employer. Now, obviously, an employer like Walmart would never, ever agree to those kinds of conditions. But you do have a number of major corporations, such as AT&T, Harley-Davidson, Kaiser Permanente. A number of major corporations have agreed to this, and it's worked out very well. But again, the places where workers need unions the most are those employers where usually they are the most abused and their conditions are the worst.
Mm-hmm. David, give me an overall picture of where the movement is right now. A few years ago, the attempts to organize were just, there just weren't very many of them. Is it growing in steam now or not?
It is growing, and actually the number of union members has grown in the last couple of years.
Really?
By a couple of hundred thousand. It's not a major change, but at least it's reversed the slight loss of members that we've seen over the last 40, 50 years. But you have to remember, too, that when people talk about the decline of numbers in the labor movement, it's not really the absolute number of members. It's the percentage of workers that belong to unions. So the number of union members has held steady at around 13, 15 million over the last 50 years. But obviously the workforce has grown, and so the percentage of workers who have a union has declined steadily ever since the 1950s.
More phone calls with David in just one moment. The Employee Free Choice Act is what we talk about this hour. David, of course, in favor of this. And it, to put it in a nutshell, it strengthens penalties for companies that illegally coerce or intimidate employees in an effort to prevent them from forming a union. It brings in a neutral third party to settle a contract when a company in a newly certified union can't agree on the contract after 3 months, and establishes majority sign-up, meaning that if a majority of the employees sign union authorization cards validated by the National Labor Relations Board, a company must recognize the union. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Number again, lines are filled, but keep on trying. 800-486-8655, 414-227-2050 in Milwaukee. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, James Galbraith will be with us. He has a new book, The Predator State, How Conservatives Abandoned the Free Market and Why Liberals Should Too. So he joins us, hour number two. David Newby is here now. We go back to phone calls. Viola from Shawano. Hi, Viola. Hello, Viola. Got to turn that radio down.
Hi, Viola. Hello.
Hi.
Viola.
Please turn the radio down. Thanks.
I did.
Oh, good.
I used to work at Carver Boat, and we tried to organize there. And they put, well, one of the vice president had his son working in there, in the factory. He attended all the meetings, and, of course, they knew what was going on. Then there was hardly anybody from the factory that attended that meeting to try to organize. That just goes to show you the mindset that people have against unions. Also, Walmart, when they organized two stores, one was in North Carolina and one was in Canada, they closed those stores, and all those people were out of a job. And what does that tell you about Walmart? They want the word, they care about their workers? Heck no.
Have they closed stores, David?
Yes, they have.
Hmm.
I thought it was in Texas. This was, maybe 4, 5, 6 years ago. It was a small group of workers within a Walmart store. They were essentially on-site butchers, meat cutters.
Hmm.
I think around 10 or 12 of them. And they did go through the process. They actually got to an election, and a majority voted for the union. And the result was that Walmart closed down that operation, not only in that one store, but in order to avoid legal difficulties, they closed down their on-site meat-cutting operations in dozens of stores in the South in order to escape any kinds of penalties. Same thing happened in Canada within the last couple of years where I believe it was the auto service repair workers, as a separate unit, small group, did vote for an election, did have an election for a union under Canadian law, which is very, very similar to the Employee Free Choice Act, and Walmart had the same response. They simply closed that operation. So it gives you a sense of what the lengths that they are willing to go to in order to prevent their workers from organizing. They also have a whole SWAT team ready in Bentonville, Arkansas, ready to fly in at a moment's notice whenever they get any indication that workers at a particular store are starting to talk about a union. And they have an entire canned program that they put into effect to make sure that they squash that organizing drive early in the process.
And what's the fear? They're going to lose a whole lot of money, or what is it?
Well, their fear is that workers will have a voice, that they'll have to actually bargain a contract, that that's probably going to mean that they're going to have to raise the wages that they pay, which mm-hmm. are very low, that they're going to have to provide far better benefits in terms of health insurance and pensions. And obviously they want to avoid that. And they are sort of the poster child for how far a corporation is willing to go in order to deny workers a voice and the right to have a voice at work.
We go next. Thanks, Viola, for the call. Ryan from La Crosse. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having my call.
Sure.
I would just like to share a little bit about my experience with a store that was getting de-unionized. And so we had the union reps actually were allowed in, and while we were going through this whole process, that another employee started to get de-unionized because we thought that the company could take better care of us than the union was. We had all kinds of pressure exerted on us from the union representatives who were allowed in the store and who are constantly talking to us and pleading their case on all of our break periods, stopping us when we were trying to leave for the night and whatnot. So I would say that whichever is in charge, in my experience, whether you're in a union or a non-union store, either the union or the corporation is going to try to maintain the status quo and use intimidation and really any means at their disposal to do so. And I was wondering if you could, if your guest could comment on that.
Okay, Ryan, thanks.
First of all, I'm absolutely amazed that the employer would allow union organizers to be in the workplace when there's a decertification campaign going on. But it brings up another interesting point about current labor law, and that is that if 30% of the workers in a union-represented firm simply sign a petition asking for an election to have the union decertified, then there's an election. That is also the same percentage under the proposal in the Employee Free Choice Act, that if 30% of the workers sign a petition saying that instead of having majority sign up, they would prefer a current ballot election like we currently have, then the workers will have that type of election. But it's much easier to decertify a union than it is actually to organize one.
What do you think the where do you think this bill is going?
Well, as your previous guest indicated, it was passed overwhelmingly in this past Congress, and the only thing that stopped it from actually being implemented was that Democrats had 51. There were 51 votes, including one Republican, in favor of the Employee Free Choice Act and 48 against. So it passed in the Senate, and it passed overwhelmingly in the House. But under the Senate rules, obviously, as we know very well with many, many pieces of progressive legislation, it takes 60 votes to stop a filibuster. And so Republicans did filibuster the bill, and therefore it never got to the president's desk. The president had already pledged that he would veto it if it did get to his desk. And so really, the fate of this legislation depends on the outcome of the November elections. That's mm-hmm. why so much is at stake.
Ron from Madison, getting short on time. Hi, Ron.
Thanks. We must understand the history of the past 50 and 150 years to understand Walmart. In the 1960s, Walmart started in Arkansas and spread throughout Dixie. In the 1860s, Dixie was the Confederate States of America fighting a war against the United States of America. The USA was called the Union. Therefore, Dixie, the Confederacy, has been anti-union ever since, and even before that, probably. So we can't do it for the folks who are trapped inside Walmart. The workers in Walmart must found their own Confederacy. Perhaps they would name it the Confederacy of Walmart Workers. they have to get away from the term union because it is poison throughout Dixieland. And we should know that by now if we haven't forgotten our history of the past 50 years. Thanks.
Thank you, Ben.
Well, there's a certain amount of truth to that, except that the behavior of management and their anti-union campaigns have been equally as vicious in the North as they have in the South. And there has been more union organizing activity in the South, especially in the last 5 or 6 years, than we have seen in decades. And especially, I think, if workers actually have a protected and legal, if they have legal protection, effective protection to organize a union, we're going to see much more organizing in the South. But there is certainly the fact that it's much more difficult to organize in the South than it is in the North. But it's almost impossible under current rules anywhere in the country, and that's because everything is stacked against workers.
David, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for the invitation. Appreciated it.
David Newby, and David is the president of the Wisconsin State AFL-CIO, a federation of 1,000 local unions collectively representing some 250,000 workers in Wisconsin. Our conversation this hour centered on the Employee Free Choice Act. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this program, and thanks to Rhonda Fanning as well for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and then more talk about the economy. Should be an interesting hour. Stay with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.